Welcome back to Powered by People, kicking off episode 2 of this series. We're thrilled to have Peter Grausgruber joining us. Peter is the CFO at Fourth Line, the go-to compliance company for banking, fintech, insurance, and beyond. He served as Group CFO at Bitpanda, Head of Strategy at OMV, and held various leadership roles in strategy and operations consulting at PwC. Today, he joins the Rec Hub CEO Harry Bigwood and Director of Brand Experience Ben Leeson to talk about the CFO and TA connection.
Welcome back to another episode of Powered by People podcast that discusses, I don't know what we discuss, everything, people. But mostly people in business. Today we are joined by Peter Grausgruber, and that was said quite well with a...
Yeah, very good.
Benjamin Stephen Leeson, whose name is actually Ben, isn't it?
Yeah.
Birth certificate, Ben. And today the topic is the CFO and the TA connection. We've had so many people on here from the world of talent acquisition and people as a more general topic. Budgets and budget constraints and all these types of questions come up are relating to where these budgets come from and how they're operated, particularly when it comes to people in business. And this is the guy that has all the answers. So...
That helps.
We're going to get started on that. Couple of topics over the course of the episode. Collaboration and communication, looking at how the finance team as a general topic collaborate and communicate with people, HR, talent acquisition, and then alignment and shared goals and how they ultimately should be, if they aren't already, driving the business to the objectives that are set out at a more holistic level, right? Before we get into that, we're going to have some quick fire questions, So first and foremost, Peter, how do you start your day?
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's also an easy one to answer because basically it's probably my 2.5-year-old son that wakes me up in the morning.
I have exactly.
So yeah, that makes it easy for me to get up.
They start earlier than you plan as well?
Well, actually, I don't need a battery anymore to wake up. I mean, basically, he does the job, right? Which is good, to be honest.
I set my alarm for an hour before she does.
Yeah.
So my daughter wakes me up at least an hour before I need to.
Absolutely. Same with me still. And but to be honest, it's great to wake up with the family and get the day started. Normally, what I do then immediately is prepare breakfast because he's always immediately hungry in the morning. So before I have the chance to do anything, to break myself or whatever, breakfast.
Nice.
So he's down to the breakfast, then I make it for him. And yeah, and then the usual routine is going to start.
Good. Ben, how's your day start?
Very similar. I mean, we're probably all in the same boat, right?
Yeah.
Just do that. Yeah. Might have to go away to go at the same time.
You know, do you do any exercise or how do you get prepared for your day?
I don't.
I mean, so that's what you do.
Yeah. I think it's the same, right? I think when you have kids, you're no longer in control of your day. Like your day is completely beholden to them and how they start it. And I think your mood for the day is also very dependent on how they wake up.
Times they woke up the night before.
Absolutely.
I usually start my day with 2 hours of meditation. I then do 1,000 sit-ups. I then go for a 17-mile run.
But you can see that.
Yeah, that's obvious. You know, and I feel great at that point.
What?
So I get back. Usually everyone's still asleep. I'm joking. Tea or coffee?
Oh, absolutely tea. I never drink milk at all. No milk, nothing.
Black tea. Legend. Favorite social media platform? Zero. You're not a social media guy, are you?
Not too much, in fact. But to be honest, I don't know if LinkedIn is... You call LinkedIn a social media?
Yeah, it is. I think it is now. Yeah.
And then it's LinkedIn probably.
Yeah.
Are you on any other...
Well, yeah, yes. I have a Facebook account, but my Instagram...
No, sure, you're right.
No, I shouldn't have said that, right?
And a MySpace, apparently. If you wasn't a CFO... What would you be?
Oh man, that's an interesting one. I mean, if I would go just a few years behind, then I would probably be still a head of strategy or something similar.
But yeah,
like Federot, I'm a strategic.
If you just go back 20 years, have you had any sort of changes in your career where you're like, do you know what, I'd love to have done that?
Yeah, I think initially when I thought about what to study, I was actually signing up as well for industrial design. I still believe, okay, very subjective.
CAD kind of stuff.
That type of things, because my dad is also an artist and I really like, I like this stuff a lot. So perhaps that would be the other.
Nice.
Yeah, could be an option.
There's always a chance to change career, Peter. And how do you unwind after a busy week?
A good question. First, I really have to say I like to just do my workout and get a bit of time off from that. So for me, fitness and gym and whatever.
Yeah. How often do you work out?
Not enough, of course, but probably.
I'm just going to guess it more than.
Did you get once? That's more than you.
If you did 20 minutes.
Well, it's probably twice or three times a week, but it depends also on your intensity. And to be honest, family, in fact, right? So the weekend, doing something with the family, that's how you can basically unwind from it.
Well, it depends. You haven't met my wife.
And you have no choice in sex, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right, so that's Peter. We're now getting into the hardcore topics of CFO and the TA connection. So first and foremost, we sort of started talking about this just now. Sort of initially had a bit of an epiphany moment that the TA team is always involved in budgeting decisions. When we're talking about, so you've got different types of budget, right?
Yeah.
Headcount.
Yeah.
And how you're budgeting that. And then you've also got, when we look at talent acquisition, what budget do they have to actually achieve the headcount? So tell us a little bit about your sort of experience and process in that sense.
Yeah, I definitely can do that. And I want to say it straight away. I'm not sure if I do everything perfect there, but I think one main assumption should be there, and it's budgeting itself needs a very, very strong collaboration between two areas, and that's finance and HR. To be honest, to be straight to the point here, which means we also need to connect to each other when the two things. I'm responsible for the financial aspects, and the people area needs to take care about how those. Do those things fit together? That means how many FTEs do we hire, of course, which profiles do we need? Because this is where it links to down to TA. Because I mean, identifying and getting the right profiles is most important, right? Yeah. So I don't care much if I spend $2 million on
me.
there I do. how the money is actually being spent. Because in the end, we need to get the best return on investment, and that means hire the best talent for the exact situation that we have, right? And I think this is where we need to talk about.
Yep.
And I mean, it's not what I can judge alone about it. This is what the management team together needs to decide. Okay, these are the budgetary constraints in terms of financials.
Yeah.
How do we, so to say, make the most out of it? Mm-hmm. And this is where we need to stick heads together. What I'm trying to do is, and it's changed a bit from what I've done previous in my career, in the scale-up environment and the fast-moving environment, you basically try to do that on a quarterly basis at least, right? You iterate, you check where you stand, etc. Right now, to be honest, actually, real-life example, we invite our head of talent probably every 2 to 4 weeks to the management meeting and discuss the roles, talk about priorities, which profiles we want to hunt. I was brought recently to the table because basically we have some room there. Is we need to prioritize to get to elevate the company the best way, right? Yeah. So to basically say, shouldn't we even perhaps pre-hire some positions which they actually haven't been in the budget initially to increase speed on certain operational topics in the company as well? Yeah.
This is just something coming into my head and a little bit off topic, I suppose, but we, you know, running a small business, where do you start? You know, like when you set your objectives out for 2025, say we're approaching 2025, where do you start from setting your objectives? Do you start with headcount? Do you start with revenue? Do you start with, and then how does that trickle down into what do we need to, does that make sense? I don't know if I'm explaining that question very well, but.
Yeah, but I tried to answer it somehow. No, I think everything needs to start with the company strategy in the end. This needs to be aligned with the investors, shareholders, the supervisory board, however you are set up. And that's a super important process, right? You need to be aligned on what you want to afford, how much you want to spend, what do you expect, in, so to say, in regards to return to it. And that triggers down, so to say, the rest of it, right? So meaning which people you want to hire, in which speed you want to hire them, which profiles, how much you want to step up actually, right? In terms of profiles you want to hire, you want to hire medium or very senior people already. There's also a possibility to overhire in the sense of this person is too senior. This person doesn't get the hands dirty anymore.
Yeah.
So this is what you need to align. And there needs to be, so to say, a derived people strategy as well. And that's simple. That needs to be honestly written down.
Yeah.
Ideally. Yeah.
So it's a big collaborative process.
It needs to be.
And it's just, where you start with, we want, I suppose that's just depends on the collective of the shareholders, right? Do you want to focus on revenue? Do you want to focus on profitability? Do you want to focus what those objectives are? And then you build that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess it also depends if your people person in your business or your most senior people person has a seat at that strategic table, right?
Yeah.
So I guess if you do have a CPO there to help build that strategy, then that obviously changes how the money is spent on the people, right?
Yeah.
I guess in a lot of businesses, talent or TA don't have a seat at that table. They're kind of given their budget, right? As opposed to kind of helping build and shape that budget. So I guess in places you've worked in the immediate example, do you have a people person with you when you are building that strategy at sea level, or is it a consideration and then it's handed down to them?
No, absolutely. Yes, we do. Absolutely. So there is, we have a chief people officer as well in the company. And and of course, I mean, she even drives the people strategy there. So meaning it's a really fully aligned, and we even CFO and CPO, so to say, also lock in for making the strategy and making explicit on how it look like. And we have a few iterations with the management team that we are fully aligned on how this should be mapped out over the next 1 or 2 years. Yeah. And on these iterations, I just always need to say that again. Don't believe that you're done when you have done your annual budgeting cycle.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. Yeah.
So funny, because we've done that before, haven't we, with the Rec Hub. We set a budget and then we just track it. We know we're off. We know we're even going that way, and you don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be iterated and worked on. And that sort of maybe brings me to another point, is how often, from a people perspective, do you sit down and look at budgets? So, I mean, not from, because you've got two types of conversation there, like budget in terms of the company's headcount.
Yeah.
Salaries, and then you've got budget in terms of how much we're spending on acquiring those headcounts.
Yeah,
and exactly. But where is diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, or whatever it might be within the people sphere? How often do you look at that budget and sort of iterate it from a TA or a people perspective?
Yeah, I look. I can speak here more broadly about it, because I'm doing rolling forecasts on a monthly basis. I think that should be, to be honest, everybody's way of doing it.
Yeah.
This topic is part of it. So absolutely, we look at all aspects of the business. And even if you say, you can also say you underspend, basically, and you need to ask yourself, why didn't we spend this possible amount of money?
You said
to get the right hire.
We spend it.
Yeah. Yeah. Most recently, that was my reaction.
Well, I can always help. I told you that.
Yeah.
You need the odd invoice.
I know. I know where to go.
Yeah, fantastic. Did you see that, by the way? And then there was a few months back where a guy just was arrested for fraud, 120 million, and he was just sending rogue invoices to Google and Facebook, and they were just paying them. He'd never worked there, no services. They were just paying these invoices.
Wow.
Nice.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to start doing that. All right, interesting. So, from, if I'm a head of talent acquisition, there's often a feeling within TA that they are, they don't necessarily have full ownership of that budget, or how they go about in spending it. Do you think that there's not necessarily a fourth line, but as a more of a collective industry standard, do you think there is enough autonomy in how different departments are spending in their budgets?
Probably not, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think if you make the assumption that it's what you just did, right? It's probably not this way. I probably need to agree, but of course, having the autonomy, and as I said, you basically predefine
yeah.
what you want to spend there, and you anyhow iterate on a whatever monthly or quarterly basis on where you stand there. And as I said, you should also ask yourself, if you underspend, did you actually achieve your goals still, right?
Yeah.
Because there must be a reason, but perhaps why you didn't spend it. And so, yes, I think there should be certain autonomy to the TA team as well.
Yeah.
To think about how do I spend it? Because I think, as mentioned before, with the management team, I think the most important target is to align on what has priority, what do we need to focus on, and give the clear message and alignment with the team to say, this is what needs to be happened and this is how we believe it should happen.
Yeah.
But how to make it happen, if they say, I go external or I can do it myself or whatever, that should be up to the TA team.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why you need that constant reassessment or flex of that plan, right? Because I guess people and the TA teams, similarly to the sales teams, there's so many variables. Like, you are not in control of the people output, right? In terms of, and I don't mean output as in terms of what they're doing, I mean output in terms of half your team could turn around tomorrow and say, we've got a new job we're leaving. The same as you might not make sales, right? How people act within that people team is out of your control. So that constant flex, I guess, needing that variable and that reassessment all the time,
yeah.
I guess that's why autonomy, it needs to be with the people team, right? Because they are in constant flux all the time. They're in, the people who are in charge of their own destinies, when they leave,
it's distributed. Yeah.
It must ultimately be driven by revenue, right? So, you know, it depends on, did we, you know, underachieve or overachieve our revenue targets this month? Because that could potentially have a knock-on effect to the budget next month.
Yeah, of course. I mean, in the end, revenue and profitability is always are the driving forces for everything, right?
Sure.
And then you need to break it down on, and also, but also to this, right? If you say, well, I mean, we hit all our revenue targets, we hit all our profitability targets, actually overachieve them and have the people in place to also further make it happen for the future, but perhaps underspend so far, whatever, then you probably don't need to spend the rest of it, right? So I think, or the other way around, right? So I think that's the constant iteration, of course, yeah.
Nice. So in this segment, Peter, we are going to... we ask, and you will do this for us at the end of this podcast. We ask every guest to recall the question for the next guest. This is Mario Herrera from Alt. Soon to be somewhere else, but it's a secret.
What should be the purpose of an HR department? Why should you even have one?
Wow, Mario.
You just binned HR. What should be the purpose of HR? Do you know what?
That's a drastic question.
Drastic question, yeah. So but let me give some context behind that. We feel like, you know, in part of that conversation, we were talking a lot about how the role of TA people and HR has changed a lot in the last sort of five to 10 years. And actually, HR has used to be the driving force behind nearly all of the topics that fall within people in a business. And now that in lots of businesses, not all businesses, HR takes more of the legal compliance, you know, employee relations type topics. But then you sort of have this, you know, this new, it used to be CHRO a lot, and now it's Chief People Officer. And HR falls within the people function in some instances rather than the, you know, the people function falling in the HR function, if you like. And we're seeing lots more chief people officers come from a talent background, not an HR background. And so we were discussing how that has changed. And, you know, Mario has some thoughts on why does HR exist? So he said, what should be the role of HR in your view?
Yeah. I mean, address a question, and I think it's a fair question in the sense that you need to ask always again and again, why do you do certain things, right?
Yeah.
And I think when it boils down, and you just mentioned one thing, the difference between human resource area, right, and the chief people and the people area, in the end, and perhaps some HR or people, nice expression, but will not will not like this expression, but in the end, of course, also people are a resource, right?
Yes.
Business, right?
Yes.
Without people, you can't deliver anything.
Yes.
So I think you also need to think it into that shape.
Without people, you can't deliver anything, said by the CFO.
So yeah, I'm spilling your body a little bit up. So meaning it's also, of course, something that you invest, right?
Yeah.
And you need to invest the best resources that you always consider what you want to put into the equation. And that means, as people are, of course, the most valuable input factor in that sense, you want to manage it properly, right? And of course, you can't ask the people area to manage or be responsible for every aspect of it, because I think the management is there to also manage people.
Yep.
But somebody needs to moderate it. Somebody needs to identify the right talents on the market. Somebody needs to think about organizational setup. Somebody needs to think about attracting them, right?
Yep. Employment branding.
Employment branding and all these things. So if you can do that, you will struggle a lot, to also create the output factors of the whole equation. I mean, I hope that people don't feel offended because no, it's so mathematical, but
it's such opinions. So in your view, HR should still sort of, that's the role of HR is sort of how resources are allocated from a human perspective, quite literally.
It's part of it, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's part of it, yeah.
It's interesting that you kicked off the conversation with you start the budgeting process with HR. And I think that's sort of maybe where we've seen different relationships between talent acquisition and talent management and people as a sort of function and the relationship with HR. But
yeah, budgeting, but also tracking and reforecasting. I think this is always, I mean, what I like to do there is also specify specific roles and people and define how they interact, how often they meet, right? To just track what they're actually doing and and where we're heading together, right? So, for example, the classically HR controller or people controller, whatever, who takes care of the FTE budget and looks which people we are hiring, etc., and profiles if we over or underspend in that sense, super important. And this, and to be honest, I actually don't care where this person is allocated, if it's in my area or
someone else.
Doesn't matter in the end.
As long as you get the data.
It really needs to talk to both of us, yeah.
And that process, that whole process must become, does it become easier or harder depending on where or what stage the company is at? So going back to one of your previous roles at Bitpanda, company that went, almost overnight went crazy, right?
Unicorn, was it?
Yeah, so going through round after round and constantly growing, and the headcount was exploding at the same time.
It moved in at one point 100 people a month, 150 maybe or more,
which is
close to
which is crazy, right? So does that make it easier to manage or harder to manage? Because you know you're going through a huge growth phase, but there's just so many variables month after month because you've got such an intake of people that must, like, your budget must, it's all over the place, right?
It makes it more difficult to put it that way.
Keeping up with that must be crazy.
It's keeping up with it is pretty difficult, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think the smelliness and more controllable it means it's also more controllable.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely true. But the bigger the company, in fact, but also the faster you want to grow, of course, it gets more complex.
Yeah, so you've got sort of two ends of it. You've got the middle bit's the hardest bit, right?
Yeah.
So when you're a startup, easy, less numbers, less stuff going on. Scale up, fucking nuts. No one knows what's going on. It's just punting figures and get them in, and hopefully it'll be okay. And then you've got sort of your corporate, which is, you know, it's all a little bit more stable. Even if you're hiring 20,000 a year, you know, if you're a 100,000 person business, it's all relative, and it's, you know, there's processes, there's people, there's
it's much more controlled, I guess. The word control is quite.
Absolutely right.
Quite fit in that sense.
I think if you do such super high fast hiring, you need to understand that's probably out of the regular business event, right?
So yeah.
Understanding needs to be different. That means it's not just you hire on an ongoing basis, etc. You're doing something extraordinary, and it needs to be treated as extraordinary. That means, however you want to call this person, it probably deserves also kind of a project manager.
Yeah,
that purely focuses on it, that it doesn't get out of control. That tracks the numbers, understands where we stand, set priorities, and is 100% of its time focused on that. And I think that's the main difference that needs to happen there.
Yeah.
You also handle the situation like an exceptional one.
Yeah.
I know this is off topic with the CFR and TA connection, but it's probably worth talking about because Ben is a marketing and branding guru.
I mean, guru is probably giving me...
Wizard, whatever terminology you would take,
take it all.
How do you measure ROI on some of these on some of these things? Is that something that actually comes under your remit? We always talk about this in different circumstances. How do you measure the ROI on brand? You've got marketing in terms of sales marketing, which you typically has a more direct line to ROI. We spend less on the event. Did we get anything out of it? You can track it through your CRM.
It's easier for me.
But in terms of like spending on brand awareness and those sort of topics, they're very important for lots of businesses, or even improved branding could be sort of tied into that. But yeah, is that just something you say, listen, we've got to spend $100,000 on that. Forget about it.
Yeah, tracking that, of course. I mean, the more fluffy it gets, of course, the harder it's to track, basically. The only thing that I can say is that I have done it several times and I understand the benefits of it, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely have seen, if you spend on it, and there might be even metrics, for example, how many applications you get in, how many inbounds you get, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What type of quality it is. You can even cluster that if you want. I mean, it's also a question of how much appetite you have but there are some metrics like I said, how many inbounds you get, where do they come from, what kind of quality, how would you basically sort it to each other. That's an approach to do it, right? And that's something that's probably easier than anything else.
No, I mean, from an employer branding perspective, that's got to be the easiest metric to manage, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in any business, right, any activity you do, you should be able to justify why you were doing that, right? I get some things that are slightly more intangible, but any investment into a team within a business, I guess, should be treated as an investment. Any investment is right personally, you want it to grow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So any investment you make in a team or on a budget, you'd expect a
return in some sense
on that investment. Whether that's like the slightly intangible one of more bums on seats from an employer brand point of view, but I guess you should track that all back, right?
Yeah, if you're just looking at it from a more generic branding perspective, then you should hope to see some form of revenue increase in some sense. That's a direct line to ROI is the blurry part.
I guess the point would be no branding should be generic, right? Like, no activity should be kind of generic. It should have a focus and a point. Do you know what I mean? It's the same as anything.
Like, very true.
We shouldn't do anything that isn't going to have an output or affect something in some way.
But I think there, to employer branding, there needs to be a list of one thing, in my belief. You can do a lot of classical employer branding activities, classically marketing things, right?
Yep.
And being advanced and et cetera. But the other thing is you also need to live a certain company culture because people... We're on those things, right? From previous employees or anything like that. You need to also create a culture. So employer branding is not just being at an event and selling the company there and giving some
away
or whatever. That's just not the point, right? You need to have a motivational a vision for the company. You need to have the right cultural setup. You need to do something internal for the people as well that they stay inspired. And this is a good basis to start in. We should not forget how important it is also for attracting talent. And
literally couldn't agree anymore. We're coming right off the
fence. Ben's a culture is the culture vulture.
But I think you can't an employer brand framework or even a massive all-encompassing EVP. It's a framework that people have to embody and live and buy into, because your culture or the ethos of your business isn't generated from a lovely EVP presentation. It's from people buying into that and feeling like they belong and feeling part of something. So completely agree. I think that the structure and the guidelines of employer branding and EVP can be set from the top, but it has to live and grow from the bottom up, right? And then you get that lovely point in the middle where everyone's
it
meets and the people embody the culture, and the culture is the people. So couldn't agree with you more on that point.
But moving on swiftly, I think segment. Just I don't know what segment we're at now, Rosie. Sorry about segments management, but our segment manager died.
But
so we're looking at sort of alignment and shared goals between budgetary constraints, the CFO and his org or her org or their org. It's too many pronouns these days. And the sort of wider talent team. So it's an interesting question posed by one of our audience members. How do you measure the success of the TA team's efforts from a financial perspective? And then I'll just add some context to that as well, because it depends on the team. We do a lot of work in some go-to-market teams where the TA team, if they are not hitting their targets, are directly impacting the forecasted revenue.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have bums on seats, the revenue won't be coming in. And then obviously there are other teams where if you don't hit bums on seats, there might be costs going out.
Yeah.
It's usually the marketing team that is. But it's just how do you measure it from a finance perspective?
Yeah, I think if we want to understand this question, I think you need to basically go back from initial budgeting, right? From the end result. You have a certain budget. You have probably distributed the hiring of certain people. You allocated it to certain periods, and you have certain assumptions behind it. Like for sales, it's a good example in that sense. As soon as this person starts, then 3 months after, the person should get tracked, right, and should show some results, etc. And that result should deliver revenue at some point.
Yeah.
So you build up hopefully a chain of logic, right, that delivers results also to the business. And as soon as you don't deliver that anymore, or you are late with hiring, you see the immediate impact.
Yep.
So I hope that this plan is so much integrated that you can also track it. That means if you don't hit, so to say, or you don't nail down the certain specific hire at the point, certain point in time, you're going to see the results. So this is also the basis how you measure it.
Mm.
And you hopefully did that so properly that you also understand what is a reasonable time to hire. That's also something you can track.
Yeah.
You can hire, and then also measure, of course, later on attrition of people. I mean, how many of the people that you've hired
are staying?
In fact, and that shows also the quality of it. And I think there are metrics in that sense that you can also use to measure that.
For sure. That's really interesting. Do you think, I'm trying to phrase the question in the right way. We talked a little bit earlier where, the head of talent acquisition or anyone that's responsible for hiring in a business isn't necessarily who else involved in that, budgeting process. And when you trickle down from, the top, these are the business objectives. To achieve them, this is how many people we're going to need to hire.
Yeah.
At that point, do you not think, or is it in, in businesses that I've worked with, it typically isn't, but the talent leader should then be, involved in that discussion, because it also in order to hire that many people, we're going to need this team, we're going to need this budget. Well, that's not possible.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's ultimately going to impact longer term the results of the business, right? Do you think in too often that person is not involved, are they?
I'm pretty sure that this is a quite common mistake. In fact, totally true. I think it's the feasibility check, at least feasibility check. Look at it. Because, I mean, even if you have certain targets and you say, it should be able to that's enough time to hire. But in the end, does the TA lead actually have the people in place?
Yeah.
Does he have, so to say, already linked up externals perhaps in place that can support for that? All of that needs to be considered. Or even if you look at the profiles that you want to hire there.
Possible.
I don't know. Well, right. In the markets, for example. I only want to serve two locations of the company and I want to get them there. I don't allow any remote ones. Yeah, I mean, that's also an answer. That's more goes in more like the qualitative zone, right?
Absolutely.
And this is also something that this person can and should challenge, right?
For sure.
And that makes the budget, the forecast, whatever you do, much more credible. And I think, this is what needs to happen, yeah? I mean, not saying it always happens, but should be.
It's going to, from now on, anyone who listens to this, it's going to happen. Good. And how do you think the relationship between TFO and the TA team could be improved? You've got two relationships, right?
Yeah.
You've got the relationship of the budget and the relationship of hiring for your team. So I suppose they're two different conversations. I don't know if they're two different people, but you know, if the head of TA goes nuts and spends loads on agencies or embedded, which is acceptable, then you know how do those relationships work?
I mean, pragmatically, what I'm doing on a normal basis is that I have at least on a monthly basis, a one-on-one with the head of TA.
Okay, cool.
In a line on basically what the priorities are, what he's hiring for, but also, of course, I also try to cover my needs as well.
Yep.
But in the end, I mean, my role is to take care about the return on investment of the company, right? If we manage it well, this person is a key lever to make that happen. And this is what we also then discuss, right? To understand, do we meet the targets there? Where are we behind, etc. That's what we wanted to do together, and that this is what we try to settle down. But as said, I think personal involvement, personal discussions will be needed to also get aligned on a mental level on what priorities need to be.
And that's the perfect and the ideal scenario. What do you think the biggest challenge you face is with a TA team? Not necessarily three for one, we don't want to
throw anyone under a bus.
But just as a typical relationship, what do you think the biggest challenge you face is with a TA team?
I think in general, possibly the biggest problem is always on getting alignment on what are the exact profiles that I'm looking for as a company. What are the right ones? No, profiles do we need? And to be honest, even the business is sometimes not, and myself as well, needs to learn on the way, right?
You need to
understand, okay, yeah, my first assumption was that I need this type of profile. It covers this and that aspect. But on the way, you probably learn. And this is why this iteration needs to happen and also this talk needs to happen. And also in the phase of that, I've screened first people, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just putting myself now in the business position. I need to understand, first discussions or first interviews actually revealed, yeah, good discussions, but actually right now, I thought it would be good to go this direction, right? Mm-hmm. The more senior one or whatever. And this is so important, and this is where I think most of inefficiencies are happening, that they are looking for something different.
So just an absolutely misalignment on what the business
is. I think that happens quite often.
I mean, it's the same. A lot of these challenges kind of we speak about when we spoke to different people on the podcast is a lot of it does boil down to just more consistent and concise communication, right?
Yeah.
Like making sure those silos aren't in place and making sure the lines of communication are there and you're not too rigid on strategy, that you can flex and change, even if you're talking about profiles, like after your first round of interviews, let's change it, let's tweak this. So they're constant like test and learn iteration of the strategy and the needs, right?
Just imagine the feeling, right? I think how important getting the right talents in time, the right profiles, and with the right level of investment it is to the company. I mean, you can lose or win on so many fronts.
Yeah.
If the recruiter or the talent acquisition person is, so to say, running after something that is actually not the right thing that they actually expected by the business, then he's wasting his time. Second, if you get the wrong person, then it hurts the company in the long term. Yeah, and that's
so true.
Yeah, and this is why it's so important to get aligned on all the angles, right? And
well, bad hires, bad people, can ruin an entire team, entire department. So it's absolutely brutal. That leads me to a topic or a conversation that floats around sometimes, which is: should there be a chief talent officer at the build? And that is not like a loaded question in LA, you know, because obviously we're talking about the importance of, and you're sitting there talking about the importance of talent and the availability of the best talent and the alignment of the right talent and how essentially the business can be made or broken based on talent. And potentially, should there be someone at the board
talent officer.
In sort of say in the modern way of working, there are a lot of chief.
That's me. Yeah.
It was so sad.
There's so many insurance. No, listen, I interrupt you, Chiefs, and I'm Indian, was working up.
No, that's the
two. Yeah, but fucking podcasts, Marilyn.
Well, I think in the end, it needs to be taken also by the chief people officer, to be honest, right? I think this person needs to cover a lot of things in parallel, right? I think, of course, there can be some such a person, specifically when it, so to say, becomes that important. If you do, so to say, high pace hiring, you can perhaps dedicate a person to that.
Yeah.
But I think for running a stated business, I think you need to also keep the management team not too broad in that sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's a tricky question in that sense, but I think it needs to be leveled out over what I call it.
You've got talent and people, HR, who's...
But to whom does then the chief talent officer report then?
They don't. They just do their own thing.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We left the model.
I have no idea. I would imagine CEO, like everyone else at the Bird Lover, maybe.
You're talking about it from a real TA perspective, yeah. From the acquisition, because then arguably just as important would be the TA or the T. Keep. I mean, what's the word I'm looking for? You've got like talent attraction is one thing,
talent retention.
Take attention. You're cheating in an opinion. Because part of, this is probably where the conversation comes from, part of attraction or acquisition, talent acquisition, is attraction.
Yeah.
And it is engagement. Because if you have an incredibly high attrition rate, and then you need to hire more people.
Yeah.
So if we can impact our attrition rate and keep more good quality people, well, then we need to hire less people. So that directly impacts the acquisition. So you've got, and then obviously you've got talent management, which is more like, you know, learning and development and upskilling and succession planning. All of these topics that typically fall within a people sphere directly impact, you know, the talent as a whole.
Yeah.
Whether that's acquisition, you know, engagement, management, whatever. But none of that always seems to be completely separate from HR as a topic. HR is you know, employee relations,
compliance,
it's contracts, it's legal.
In the old world, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's probably where this conversation, the chief talent officer and chief HR officer, or maybe they are both the chief people officer, but it's just been a conversation that's sort of...
I totally get it. But in the end, I think those things interplay, right? It's the talent retained and everything.
Absolutely.
So I think in the end, it should be covered. I mean, can call it chief people officer or in any kind, but I think
it's all under that.
It should come from that. But as I said, I think if you do high pace hiring or do a different thing in that setup, then perhaps this might be justified to elevate it. But I think for a longer term constant development, I think it should
keep,
be under
keep it narrow.
Yeah,
keep the alignment the same. Yeah, good.
Well, it kind of takes us full circle. Providing you've got that strategy and you're aligned on that strategy, then the deployment of that, whether it's acquiring people or keeping people, it's always under that.
People.
Yeah. It's all under
loads of chiefs.
Yeah.
I think that's everything from the CFO. I don't know, what do you think, Ben? Have we covered most topics that have come up in our podcasts?
I think so. I think it's really interesting to always hear the interaction between talent teams and finance teams. As I said, we had Amar on a little while ago on series one.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine who's gone from a finance role to a CEO role, so it was interesting to hear his journey and the, kind of his interaction with people. And the same with you, Peter, Ali, you've kind of for your roles have been able to interact with TA teams, and I guess the positives of that is always good to hear.
And for you, Peter, you've gone from strategy, operations, CFO, CEO, the next role for you.
To be honest, I'm quite happy with the CFO role. I think it's a very interesting one because you can be very, very impactful.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of what the CFO role basically entails. It's so to say, cover all the success factors. You have to monitor it. You have to track it. You have to suggest it. I think it shouldn't be underestimated. And so to say, also in the new world of how we should think about it, how... the CFO helps and which levers the CFO should have in hand.
For sure.
To be honest, I like that role.
Yeah, I like it a lot. You know?
That's good.
Good. So hopefully we've covered all of the questions and queries that have come up in relation to the CFO and the TA connection from previous episodes. Thank you, Peter, for being a guest on the Power Marketing podcast. And thank you, Ben, for joining us once again.
Very welcome.
And that's it from us. Join us next time.